Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 57. I am Chris, as always, joined by Jeff.
Yo.
And we have a pair of supernatural horror, religious themed supernatural horror thriller type films lined up for you. We'll get to why Jeff is laughing in a moment.
Well, I'm just picturing me trying to write the blurb for this one. the supernatural action or something.
Yeah, I mean we'll get into it shortly. To cover both films and kind of like talk about why it's hard to kind of describe what genre they fall into, but. Before that, we've both seen at least one movie of the same sort. Have you seen anything else?
Yeah,
over the last month, really, because I don't think we did this before our special episode. So
no, I've seen some horror movies, man.
Yeah,
you want to hear about some horror movies?
I do.
All right, I'll start with the one you're probably most interested in, which is Heretic, starring, what's his name now? I'm already screwing up.
What the fuck
is that? Why can't I think of his name?
It's a huge actor. Hugh Grant, yep.
Yeah, and it's basically these two Mormon girls go to sell them on Mormonism. And you know, if you've seen the trailer, it's all just one big setup by him. He's got diabolical plans, and this is a pretty fun little movie that all takes place in this house. He kind of, you know, puts them through a test, sort of a very evil, he's a sicko. What is really fun about this movie is Hugh Grant, and it's not just his performance, but just he is this guy who's basically an atheist who's just really trying to tear down their religious beliefs through the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the joy of it. But it's also, it's almost like they're the guys that wrote this, they're trying to get everything they want to say about religion out, and they're using Hugh Grant to do it. And there's some really neat stuff, which I guess I won't spoil, but he kind of talks about how everything is a copy of a copy of a copy. So your religion is really just copying an older thing, an older story that people all made up, and this is all made up, blah, blah, blah. My one thing, I like the movie. It didn't make my top 10. And as it gets more in my rear view, I'm kind of the movie is done kind of saying everything that it has to say, it just kind of ends after that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a movie that needs a much stronger third act. It needs a third act, honestly. It just kind of, you're just like, all right, well, there we go. That's the end. But we're seeing it when it comes out to, normal rental price, I'd say.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. So I think I just checked and it was still $20. So I was I'm just wait. Once it hits $6, I'm good.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it. Maybe you'll like it more than me. A lot of people were really, really high on it. It did end up on some people's top tens and stuff. So, I saw a movie called Red Rooms. Have you heard of Red Rooms, Chris?
I have not.
Okay. So this was getting some buzz. Dave Chen, I think, put it on his top 10 movies at least. And, I did not realize this when I rented it. Was coming to Shudder. I think it might be on Shudder now. If it's not on Shudder now, it's coming to Shudder soon. I did not realize. Okay. Here's the premise of the movie. There is a guy, he is on trial for streaming himself, torturing and killing girls. Setting this camera up so that people on the dark web can watch and pay for it. That is when you start the movie, you're at his trial.
Okay.
And you follow this character, this lady who is showing up to the trial and watching the trial. And she kind of befriends this other, like, kind of crazy lady who's, like, obsessed with the killer, who, like, thinks he should be freed, or, you know, every big court case, there's people like this, yeah, right? But our main character, you don't know what is really up with her almost the entire movie. Like, you have to kind of read into, like, her face and what's going on, and when it clicks, what's going on here with the movie, and I was, like, maybe a step ahead of it. I kind of had a feeling where it was going, but when it goes where it's going, it's pretty fucking bravo to it for being a movie that could, you know, does a pretty good job of creeping you out without, mm-hmm. there's never any movie. So it's that rare horror movie that is like, it's getting its like scares, so to speak, out of the ideas in it and the performance of the lead actress. I don't know how you, I thought it was pretty, like, when it went where it was going, I was like, oh boy, that's dark. It's out for sure. It definitely would be one of the better movies to come to Shudder in a long time. Kind of has something to say about, like, true crime obsession and kind of the weird things that people could get off on. But I don't want to say any more, spoil it. Again, I think it might be on Shudder now, Chris. So if that sounds interesting.
It is on Shudder. I just checked. So yeah, it sounds neat. I added it to my watch list. Maybe I get to it.
Yeah, it is, again, higher quality than you would normally expect. The one thing, and I didn't know this going in when I read, one, I didn't know it was coming to Shudder, and two, I didn't realize that it's French. So it just, you know, heads up, it's a French film.
Yeah, that's fine.
I also saw a movie I think you would really dig, actually, called Caddo Lake. And this is on HBO.
Like, it is cattle, as in, like,
no, like, okay. It's CADDO. Okay. I think it's a real lake too, because if, like, you Google it, like, it'll just come up with pictures of this lake somewhere. So this movie. All right, how do I talk about this without spoiling it at all? All right, this movie was made by M. Night Shyamalan, and having seen the movie now, I totally get why Shyamalan would be, like, drawn to the script. Like, why he'd be like, we need to make this movie, because it's totally in his wheelhouse of shit. Big twists. And like, the setup for it is, you're, like, following these two different stories, like, these people that live near this lake. Like, you're following this guy who works on the lake, and then you're following this girl who's, like, an angry teenager. And you're just like, what the fuck does one have to do with the other? You know, and for a while, like, you'd be really lost, and you might be kind of, like, bored. It's like, what am I watching? Where the Crawdads Sing or something? Like, what is this? Mm-hmm. Like, is this, like, some Southern Gothic drama? That's how it comes off for, like, I'd say at least a half hour, and you're kind of lost. You're like, what is the point of all this, right? But once it gets going, when it reveals what it is, and, like, I think that, like, you'll figure that out, Chris, like, the first time they kind of show what's going on, you'd be like, oh, I see, something like this.
Okay.
But once it reveals what it is, and once you get what the twist is, it's, like, the most brain melting fucking twist you ever, like, had. Like, you're just like I need charts and graphs to figure this fucking thing, Lex, man. Like, it is pretty confusing. It's pretty, like, hard to wrap your head around exactly what's going on because of the nature of what it is. And I could say, and be like, oh, I could see how that could get confusing, but I don't. Like, it's so much better to watch it like I did.
Thing. Just go in blind.
Saying, yeah, I'll check it out. I think you'd enjoy it, because I think you could appreciate a movie that's like, soul. That's kind of what the movie is.
Yeah.
That's neat. Yeah. Yeah, I'll kind of leave it at that, man. Three horror or horror adjacent movies. that are recent.
All right, and then both of us, the only other movie that I saw is a movie we both saw. Jeff got me to watch Den of Thieves, I believe, last year.
Yeah, on the show. Maybe
a year before. Finally, after like six years.
Years of going,
you need to watch this. And I did. It was right in my wheelhouse. Cool, heist movie. Also, like a kind of gritty cops and robbers type thing going on. So, Den of Thieves 2 Pantera came out this past week.
7 years later.
Yeah.
7 years later. So, I'd always been like, this doesn't seem like it's really going to happen. Like, I never believed this was actually going to materialize, and here it is.
Yeah, it's here. O'Shea Jackson, Gerard Butler back as their two characters, Big Nick and
Donnie.
Donnie. It's another heist movie, I liked Pantera. I think it's just missing something that Den of Thieves had. It's missing a few things, but like the big thing for me was like, you don't have the back and forth between like Big Nick's crew of cops chasing down these bank robbers, heist guys. So yeah, attention. Yeah,
there's no what's his name, the Pablo Schreiber character, the Merriman. Like, him and Butler kind of butt heads in the first one.
Yeah, like there's nothing going back. So it's and Butler, like Big Nick, joins up with Donnie like almost immediately. Like in this, like once he finds him, he's still kind of obsessed with finding him after the ending of the first one, and. Once he does, he's like, I'm tired of fucking, being the hunter. I want to get spoils.
I want money, yeah.
Then he joins in on this heist. It's a cool heist.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's as good as the first one. Like, it's neat. There's cool things about it, I think. Like, like this one scene where, like, just the things they do to get around the security. Like, they have this weird kind of, like, iridescent clear-ish shield that they use. That was kind of neat. There's cool things in it, but it's just like, I don't think the heist itself is as cool. I don't think it's quite as high stakes.
Nope.
It's a fun heist movie, but I don't think it's as good. Where were you on it?
I have to start with like the first Den of Thieves, which is like, I love that movie. I've seen it probably like mm-hmm. five times now. I just think it's one of the best heists I've ever seen. Like the big heist itself, and it just takes up like the last hour. But then like the more you watch the movie, there's so many things about it that stick out. It's kind of like around the edges movie by like a first time filmmaker. And it's kind of what makes me love it more. Like, Big Nick is this giant fucking asshole in the original. And, like, every scene with him is electric because of it. Like, it's just, it's either, like terrifying almost. Or, like, you kind of laugh at him because it's just, like, so crazy the things that he does and says. And they become, like, the things that you remember, like, rewatching the movie. You're just like, oh, I love when he confronts the other, the gang of guys and the Benihana, and he's just like, yeah, we used to beat your ass back in high school. We still beat your ass. He's like talking shit about fucking football from fucking 20 years or whatever. And Pablo Schreiber goes, hey man, I got family here. I don't appreciate you popping off. Like, just, I don't know. There's just so many like memorable scenes like that. Like you introduced the Big Nick, and in the movie, it's like a crime scene. And he fucking picks up like a box of bloody donuts and eats one of the fucking donuts while he's smoking a cigarette. The guy is just a fucking mess. And, as you watch that movie, several times, like every scene just becomes so memorable. Even the ones that are like there for like literally no reason. Like there's a scene where 50 Cent's daughter is going to prom and like, he brings the kid into the garage and has all his boys scare the shit out of him. And then once he leaves, they all start laughing. And it's like, It has nothing to do with the story. It doesn't advance the plot at all. And that's kind of like the joy of that movie. And then when you get to the actual heist, it's so exciting and so like just wild. Like it like throws you for a loop because you're like, I know that they're going to rob the Federal Reserve. Why are they going at the small savings and loan? Like, what the fuck is going on
here? Yeah.
And it just like gets more and more exciting like that until the end. And then like you have this huge twist at the end that is cool with Donnie, where you find out he's the mastermind. I mean, I guess spoilers for an old movie, but most people have seen this now. And then this one, it's like, yeah, it's a decent heist movie, but like, man, is it like the magic is not quite there. Like, I don't know. It's like, it doesn't have any of that really. It's like this weird, like hangout movie for some of like with him and Donnie becoming friends. And yeah. I feel like they changed Big Nick's character a little bit where he's just kind of this lovable doofus in this. Like, it doesn't feel like the same Big Nick. Like, I don't know.
He's not menacing anymore. Like, no, he's...
it's just, like, it's charming now. Like,
yeah. Which is fine. Like, that's also fun, but it's just... It changes kind of the, you know, themes of the film. Like, it shifts the tone of it a bit.
And it's just, like... like the heist is like there's cool things I like about the heist. Like there's like this extending pole that they have to get from one building to the other, and some fun shit happens with that, such as Big Nick's ass breaking. And when they're doing the heist, it's a really cool idea of like there are like cameras covering every inch of this fucking, you know, diamond exchange or whatever, but there's only 11 monitors. Yeah. So it's constantly cycling through. It's like they have to time their movements through the building to the cameras, which is really neat. And it's just, and I appreciate like everyone, like the people who are like really riding high on this movie are like, you know, it's so brave and bold of him to go in such a new direction. Like it really does. Like, yes, it still has the big heist and all that, but like it does feel very different than the original. And there, you know, a lot of people are like, hey man, that's awesome when a sequel just doesn't serve you up the same thing then. And like, I agree with that. I just think what it's serving up here is not as good as the original. So like,
yeah,
it was a little disappointing for me after all these years to finally get to see these characters again. And I just didn't like the movie as much. It's not terrible or anything. Like definitely if you're a fan, check it out. But like, it's just not as good. I don't know. And the ending, like,
yeah,
we can't spoil it, but the ending kind of like one is not surprising because you're like, duh, and two, like it tries to have things both ways in a way, and I like it didn't make sense quite to me. I'm like, well, I can't spoil it, but I think you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I saw you put out like asking, like, hey, did anybody, like, what the hell was up with that ending? Did anybody respond to that? Like,
yeah, it's satisfactory. Like, they were just trying to make sense of it, too.
Okay, so it's not, like, there's no, like, hey, you guys missed this thing, and that
I don't think we
makes it make sense.
I think it's just, like the first movie, was, like, a passion project. This guy worked on it for, like, 15 years, and it was still rough around the edges. And it's like, it's kind of a mess, but it just, everything just like magically works in that first one. And here,
yeah,
there's certain things like that with the ending where I'm like, that's kind of a mess, but it, you know, it's hard to pull off that trick twice where you make something that's a mess and it's brilliant. Here, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, that doesn't really work if you stop and think about it for a second. Like, I don't know. At the end of the day, though, it's like, I love Butler as this character.
Yeah.
So, like, I like you. If you want to make another, I'm in. And I think he has an idea for another, and he wants them to all be different movies. Like, this is supposed to be more like Ronin. The first movie was supposed to be like Heat. So I don't know where he's going next. You know,
that makes a little more sense in like how he's kind of approaching it. Like,
yeah,
that he's kind of modeling it after his favorite kind of heist films that are very clearly different. I get that feel from Pantera. Like, you can definitely see the inspiration of Ronin in it, but
oh yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think the car chase in that is as good as the one in Ronin. And like, in fact, the final action sequences in Pantera aren't quite as good as like the, you know, the shootout road and the original. And anyway, it's good. Watch it if you want. We don't get a lot of heist movies, so like, it's a good heist movie. Go watch it if you're into that.
And it's like, it's almost like what something like I feel I'm going down this path, like the Fast and the Furious movies before they got crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like at some point they were like kind of a more serious thing. And it's like here we're already getting super silly with it. I'm like, I don't know. But it's cool to have another franchise that is like a heist movie franchise. Like those are fun. I just think that this one, again, like, there's things about the heist I like, but there's a lot of things about the movie that definitely fall short of the original. But it, you know, hey, it's, I didn't hate it. I just, I came away being like, oh man, I really wanted to love it. And I didn't love it.
Yeah. Early in the year, plenty more hopefully to love as 2025 goes on. But now it's time to jump into our doubleheader of weird religious themed supernatural horror adventure thriller movies. I cheated a little bit only because you texted me earlier and were like, hey, I saw you watch Prophecy, you ready to record? I think we had the same feeling on this movie. We're gonna start off with the Prophecy because I feel that we are gonna be way more positive on Warlock and spend more time on it as well.
So. Maybe, yeah. I gotta ask you though before we get into Prophecy, like you've seen this before?
So I thought I did. I don't have it on any of my it wasn't on Letterboxd.
Yeah, but it could have been, you know, it's so old that you
Yeah. Know. So if I did, it was probably back in when it came out in 95 or somewhere in that time period. I honestly don't remember. Then you told me I watched Warlock 2 and I watched Warlock 3. So there's possibility that I've seen all the movies in both of these franchises and I just don't remember anything except one of them.
The reason I asked is because I was like, is this one of his favorite movies? Because I know this is in your wheelhouse. Like I know... We've done a few of these, this era and this type. I'm thinking of we did Stigmata. And
that's End of the era of this, yeah.
But this is not one later.
End of Days is very much like this movie, except weirdly better.
yeah, I'd say so.
but very much like in the same kind of wheelhouse. Watching this again, like there are things I remember about it, but
I've never seen it.
I was like, this is weird as fuck. Like,
it was all new to me. I do remember the existence of this movie. Like, I remember that there was a movie called The Prophecy with Christopher Walken, but not a single frame of this have I seen before. And I was just like, okay, this is weird. This got a hell of a cast, but I'll let you steer the ship here.
Yeah, so it does have a hell of a cast, but directed by Gregory Wyden. It came out in 1995, September 1st.
Mary.
What?
Can you keep a secret? Biggest secret ever.
Centuries ago, a second coming was foretold.
What did he say to you, Mary?
He asked if I could keep a secret.
What was that?
Something he gave me.
But what's coming?
He wants something. Something that's here.
Isn't what anyone expects.
Oh my God.
It's a war in heaven.
Over what?
Us humans.
You can't help her.
Christopher Walken. The Prophecy.
It seems like it bombed at the box office. Wikipedia is showing $16.1 million that it made. That's not a great turnout. The cast is kind of crazy. Christopher Walken stars as Gabriel. Virginia Madsen stars as this teacher, Catherine. Elias Koteas is kind of, he's the star of this. He's kind of the detective, Detective Daggett. He's very familiar. I'm sure I've seen tons of shit that he's been in.
Elias Koteas?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, he's in a million things. He's, he is the caretaker guy in Let Me In. He's the one that's taking care of, spoilers, I guess, for Let Me In. He's Chloe Moretz's old lover.
Got it.
Who's been here for a long, long time. He's great. Oh, wait. Was it him? Now I'm thinking maybe I'm mixing him up. I think I'm mixing him up with another actor I really like.
he's in Let Me In.
Is he?
In the 2010 Let Me In. He's credited as the policeman.
Okay. I'm mixing him up because Richard Jenkins is actually the caretaker of her in that. But yes, he is a cop in that movie. But he's been in, so many things. Yeah,
Shutter Island. I just noticed that he played Casey Jones in
Casey Turtles Jones. Movies. Like, if Earl were here, he would have directed this. He'd be like, no, it's Casey Jones.
You guys.
That's kind of like before he was like a big serious actor. That's kind of like maybe one of his first roles.
Very early for him.
But yeah, he's in a million things. He's, I think, an awesome actor.
I said Virginia Madsen. Eric Stoltz plays somebody. He's also been in a ton of stuff. And then Viggo Mortensen. We'll get to who he is in the film, but he is giving a performance in this. It is wild. Adam Goldberg is he's kind of a shitbag, but he's, people know who he is, so
I like him. Amanda Plummer, like, I don't know if you made the connection, but this is like a reunion of half the cast of Pulp Fiction. Cuz Amanda Plummer, Eric Stoltz basically looks like his character from Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Walken, he has the watch scene in Pulp Fiction. Like, it's a bunch of actors who 1 year prior to this were in one of the best movies of the last quarter century.
Then they did this.
Then they also did this
thing. They're pros. Hey, we'll just hang out together. Directed by, Gregory Wyden. What I'm looking at is like, it's the only feature film that he did.
Oh, really?
He was
the writer of, go ahead.
Yeah. He wrote Highlander. He wrote Backdraft. He wrote this as well. Backdraft 2. He did like some stuff for Tales from the Crypt. He actually directed some episodes of Tales from the Crypt. Did you have something else that he did?
No. I knew that he had written Highlander, which I'd never seen Highlander, believe it or not, but it kind of makes sense. What I know of Highlander, kind of similar to this.
Fits in with this. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So what this film is in some ways, I guess it's a murder mystery. It starts out that way, where somebody gets killed. The guy who gets killed is are angels. There's a bunch of fucking angels on Earth. They're running around looking for something, and Daggett, Elias Koteas's character, he's a detective. He used to be, I guess he was going to become a priest, and then he had some visions and lost his faith, so he became a cop instead.
He's going to become a detective. Obvious second choice.
Right. That religious thing didn't work out, but now I'm going to be a cop.
It's also explained very weirdly, because he's like, have you ever lost your faith because you saw too much or something? Like, it's weird how he sets it up. It's like, all right, so you were about to become a priest. You had these crazy visions that, like, all the shit was real. And then you were like, I'm good on that. Like, I don't know. I was like, all right, sure, whatever.
So I guess the film doesn't really lay this out for a little bit. Like it kind of lets Daggett chase down some leads and do some investigative work. In the meantime, you're seeing, you know, some other characters kind of maneuver around, but there are angels that have come to Earth, and there's a war going on between the angels and God, and the Archangel Gabriel, played by Christopher Walken, he is on Earth trying to capture this soul that will... It doesn't make any fucking sense, but like I have to get this soul because otherwise the humans win. So,
well, no, it kind of makes sense to me, but it's like such a wild, like crazy idea that like he basically wants this like general, like, you know, this evil general soul because he thinks he can help him, you know, his win army of angels. Yeah, win the war. And it's like this guy who committed atrocities in some whatever war, some who knows. Strange idea. Like, I don't know. Okay. But again, this is not like my wheel. This is not my type of movie. The God, like the angels and God war or whatever. Like, that's just, I never really works for me, but go ahead.
So they didn't. That's like the premise, but like you never see heaven, you never see these angels fight.
Yeah,
like just people that look human, played by fucking Christopher Walken and Eric Stoltz and Viggo Mortensen, just kind of like strolling around and doing their thing, acting weird as fucking hell.
It's like a perfect fit for Walken. I'm sure we'll get to it, but Mortensen really hams it up.
Yeah.
He's having a blast in this, but it's just,
And this is part of the issue with this film, though, is like on one hand you have, you know, the Daggett storyline of him being the cop, and like they're trying to play it as kind of this gritty police procedural that just happens to be, you know, religious and themed. And then on the other end, you have these fucking angels that are hamming it up, like you said. Like, Christopher Walken is, he's just strutting everywhere. Like, he has a presence that's weird. It's like, it's kind of off-putting and flamboyant, and...
It's Walken.
it is. It's just really weird that, like, he's in, like, the Archangel Gabriel is, like, a huge... You know, in religious kind of themes, like he is the archangel, like he's the guy, and this guy, like Walken, is just playing him like a super fucking weirdo, who hates humans, like in general, like he just keeps calling like all humans like monkeys and
chimps, talking monkeys,
and, yeah. Like, he's brought back, Adam Goldberg's character, this weird like crackhead type dude. He's brought him back to life multiple times, it seems, and this dude just wants to die.
I think it was a guy who was committing suicide or committed suicide, and like the punishment is like an angel gets your soul, or I don't know. Like the impression I got is like he stopped him from committing suicide, or I don't know, one or the other. Right, like from getting suicide, or the dude committed suicide and now he's in the service of this guy, and Adam Goldberg just wants to die. Like, that's his whole character. I want to die.
He's just like, please kill me,
please let me die. And it's kind of a funny bit where Walken will be like, yeah, just after this job, just one more thing, and he keeps doing that to him
real soon.
He's like, never make a deal with an angel or something like that.
Like on the cop side, it's really weird. So like they get this angel gets in a fight with this angel Uziel. He gets in a fight with this guy Simon, who's also an angel, in like some apartment building. I'm not sure why Simon's there in Daggett's town. Like, I think they're in LA to start with. Like, I don't know why Simon comes and visits Detective Daggett at all. It makes no sense really why he gets involved in it. But this other angel is kind of like hunting Simon. They get in a fight. Simon kills him. And then like the coroner is like, he's inspecting the body is like, yeah, this dude has a dick and a vagina. Like, he's a hermaphrodite. He's
got,
like,
got no eyes. His,
like, there's like, the bone structure isn't like normal bone structure. Like, normally you have like rings in your bones, like a tree. Like, this guy has no aging. A bunch of like weird shit.
I think the blood of an aborted fetus or something. Was it the blood? Yeah.
Yeah, he's like,
well, okay.
Like Daggett's like, all right, that's weird. What's weird about it? He's like, yeah, that would be perfectly normal if it, you know, if it was an aborted fetus, but this dude is not. Like, so chemistry is all fucked up. And what's weird about it is like Daggett and this coroner are taking this like super seriously. And then on the other end of it, Gabriel is walking around like he's just strutting everywhere. He's like acting weird and throwing people across places. He's in a completely different movie than what they're doing on the cop side of things. So it's like really fucking strange. Because one side is like super serious. The other side is like, hey, I'm just having a fun time. And the film kind of like matches Walken's energy when he's on screen. Like, wild shit's happening. Like, you know, he's like tossing cops across the screen. He's like lighting people on fire. But then, you know, if you flip back to the cop, it's all solemn and very, like very morose.
Crisis of faith movie.
Yeah. It's, meanwhile, like all this supernatural weird shit's going on the other side.
I guess I would disagree with you a little bit, and I think that the whole movie thinks it's all serious. Like, I think I think that like Mortensen and Walken take it to a different level because of just their presence. But I think that the director thinks this whole thing is like great shit. Like, and it's like serious, like a good serious, like, you know, religious thriller horror movie.
No. I don't know. I took notes for Warlock. I like started with this one and then like very quickly lost interest with writing anything down. So they did not kind of maneuver in yeah, there's just nothing really weird, like nothing's going on here. Like it's all right, we're now gonna spend time with these kids in a school, and the one angel Simon is like passing. He passes on the soul of the weird general. He passes that on to this little girl
in this very like awkward kissing scene with a young
actor. Yeah, she's like 8-9 years old, and this 40-year-old dude is just like. Full on.
Yes, he's the drug dealer from fucking Pulp Fiction.
It's a weird, weird scene. The fact that like nobody is like really disturbed that this strange homeless dude is hanging out in the upstairs of the school. They make a note of it. Like, she calls the cops, and the cops are like, "Yeah, we're busy with other shit." Like, I guess just keep the kids away from them. I don't know. Like, it'll be fine. We'll be there tomorrow. We'll scare them away. Like,
yeah.
It's like, what? What? Like, I get you're a small town, but like, who doesn't have at least like one cop to come like protect the school kids? And I guess she's native. This little girl's supposed to be Native American or something, because then they bring in that religion to this where they're like doing like Native American chants and ceremonies to like cleanse her because they feel that there's an evil spirit in her. I guess technically there is, because he breathed this dark soul into her. It's fucking weird. And then Viggo Mortensen shows up as Lucifer.
And gives this long speech.
It's fucking wild. Like, he's having a good time.
He is really having fun in this. And his speech is basically like, you know, basically, if Gabriel gets to go through with what he's trying to do, it's going to turn heaven into hell, and that's one hell too many. And so, like, he wants to help the good guys. We have Lucifer helping the good guys.
Yes.
I don't know.
Like, kind sure. of. Like, it doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, this film is kind of all over the place, and that's where I ended up on it. Like, it's wild. I don't think the ending is particularly exciting. Like, nothing in this really stands out. Like, it's outside of Christopher Walken and Viggo Mortensen, like, hamming it up. Like, nothing kind of really clicks.
I watched it today and I'm like, how does it end?
Oh, how does it end? Yeah. Like, they have, so they're,
yeah.
Lucifer kind of comes down and, you know, he's fighting off. He helps Thomas, like, fight off Gabriel, and they kill him in some way. And,
some way.
Yeah. I'm not even, I don't.
We both watched this today. Am I correct? Did you watch this today?
I watched it last night.
Okay, I watched it today.
Within the last 24 hours, yes.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't even remember how it ends. I remember, like, there's, like, this stupid voiceover at the end about, like, the meaning of fucking faith, or, you know, like, the Elias Codius, like, gives this little fucking voiceover at the end, and it's like, so somber Lucifer and, like, serious. It's, like, stupid.
Lucifer and Gabriel get in, like, in a fight, like, they have, like, this, like, you know, argument over, you know, evil's my realm, leave my shit alone.
Yeah, that's right.
And he tells Gabriel he needs to go back to heaven and rips his heart out of him, which, you know, kind of makes him leave. I guess. I don't know. Like, his eyes fall out of his sockets, and he kind of looks like the husk that, the corpse in the morgue with the other angel is. And then, I don't know, then there's a fucking, like, they continue to do the exorcism. I don't know why they need to do a fucking exorcism. I don't know why.
Well, they gotta get this poor girl getting this Hitler out of her.
But so it's like, is this film saying then, like, that, like, there's multiple religions are correct, and, like,
yeah, that's also, like, yeah, I don't think it knows.
Because, like, they're doing, like, Native American, like, that's chants and stuff, and but Lucifer's like, yeah, don't stop, keep doing it. Like, I remember that piece clearly. Like, he gets very angry at them when they're kind of, like, looking up, and they expel it, and there's some, like, horrible CGI floating around, and then it ends with that. It ends with them kind of, like, all standing on a ledge or whatever after Lucifer goes back to hell, and they look at the sunrise or whatever.
It looks like a commercial or for something. Yeah. I don't know what. And he just, like, gives this voice, so, you know, something about the meaning of life, or, you know, faith, or I don't even know what the fuck. Do you remember what he kind of says?
No.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I wish I don't know. I wish I could have been bothered to take notes on this one. Like,
I didn't
really lost me, like, 20 minutes in.
I sometimes will not take notes when I'm not hosting the episode. Especially if it's my first time seeing a movie, I just want to kind of take it in. But yeah. Also this one, I was just like, one, I knew I would be recording hours after it. So I was like, I don't know. Do I really need to take notes? And two, I was just like, there's not much. I'll give you my thoughts on it. Like, it's all the stupid plot that I think is stupid, and it's just, like, not my jam. Like, it's just not my type of story. But it's really all just, like, you know, the angels are mad that God gave human soul, and so that's why Christopher Walken's here. He's trying to start a war, and he wants the soul of this general that was evil and committed atrocities because he thinks it'll help him in the war. And it's kind of like the whole movie is just explaining, like, what is going on, but without any, like, thrills or memorable scenes or anything, like, that's fun like that, where you're just like, I'm watching this junky subgenre I'm super into, and you're not providing me like anything to hang on to that I really like. Like,
yeah.
So yeah,
and I do like this type of nonsense, and I was like,
Okay, so I thought maybe it was just honestly, I was like, is this one of his movies from the 90s that you really like? I saw it.
I don't remember. There are four sequels to this.
I can't believe both of these movies.
Absolutely amazing.
Both these movies inspired, like, you know, set off a franchise, which is crazy. I mean, I'm assuming they're both like all straight to video shit, but still, that's a franchise.
Yeah, I mean, they got Christopher Walken to come back in The Prophecy 2 and Prophecy 3.
And then I guess they made two more after that.
Yes.
There's even more prophecies.
Yeah, I don't know who they have planned. I don't even know. Well, I don't know the story at all.
Can you believe they got Christopher Walken, though, to do straight-to-video sequels? That's crazy.
No, dude. That's insane. Yeah. Absolutely insane.
Oscar-winning actor.
He must have really liked it. Like, he must have really enjoyed the character. Like,
yeah, or, you know, paycheck, whatever. Like, he does seem like the type that would just be like, whatever. Sure.
Like, maybe it was, you know, how for a little while, Nick Cage was just like appearing in like 14 films a year.
Yeah.
And like some of them are like, you know, he's just there acting weird. Maybe they were like, hey, Chris, like, you want to act weird for us? We'll pay you half of the budget of this film because they're going straight to video. But. Yeah, he came back for 2 and 3. That's absolutely insane. And then
insane that it got a 2 or 3. How did this movie get 2 or 3?
I'm confused at the fact that the dates on 4 and 5 are both 2005. So it's like it was like 4 was June 7th, 2005, and 5 was September 6th, 2005.
Might be an Amityville situation where it's just like people are just
somebody making... took the license to or got the name because it's no longer protected and
yeah
maybe, but I don't even know if I can sit through 2 and 3 to see Christopher Walken act weird again.
Like, no, not for me. This is not for me.
I did not enjoy this one at all. Like, really, it some of the imagery is fine, I guess, but I don't know, it didn't work for me.
Yeah, this era of like 90s horror I don't have a lot of nostalgia for, and this is something I never saw, and it's not, again, not my kind of jam.
Yeah,
I don't think it's like the worst thing ever. Like, it was fine. Like I was able to sit through it.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it. I didn't find anything I liked about it other than like, it had a cool cast. I was like, this is half of Pulp Fiction.
It's like, why are they in this weird film?
Yeah. For me though, I'd give it like I was going to say 5, but I'm going to go down a little bit. I'm going to go 4.5.
Okay.
It's just, it's, there's no reason to revisit this unless it's something that you like when you were a kid or something. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that, you know, if you have like a fondness for this type of film and you watched it 30 years ago at this point, like, yeah.
Probably maybe, people are going to really dig it.
But I don't think it brings anything to the table in 2025. It's not goofy enough to like be like, ah, that was some funny shit, and it's not, it thinks it's profound, but it is not. Yes. Takes itself way too seriously for some nonsense. There are better films that kind of like touch on like angels and shit.
Watch Dogma.
Yeah. But seriously, much better. I'm right there with you. I think I'm going to hit on the one you were going to give it. I'm going to give it 5 out of 10.
All right.
So So that brings us to Warlock, our second film.
In a time of fear and suspicion,
you choose to admit your crimes before man and God?
His coming was foretold. Now, he is here.
You know the signs.
You are bewitched.
He has the face of an angel.
Channel me a spirit.
The charm of the devil.
Hear me when I say he's evil. Evil absolute.
And the powers of a god. Satan also has one son.
But you're the first to have laid eyes upon the new Messiah.
Now, an enemy from his past.
Who appointed you executioner?
And a girl from the present.
You know what he's capable of.
Next time he's gonna kill me.
I'll not let him harm you.
Are the only hope for the future. This is the terrifying adventure that could set the world on fire. Warlock.
I guess it originally debuted at Cannes. It's a weird place for a film like this to debut in 1989, but it did not see a release in the U.S. until 1991.
I think it was made in. So this, I think, released internationally. Like, yeah, it was at the Cannes Film Festival, but then I think it got an international.
Yep.
I think New World Pictures had problems finding someone to distribute this in the U.S. That they didn't have any faith in it for some reason, which I could kind of see, but it, I don't know.
It's a weird thing. Yeah, like I could see it, like, because it's not. So, this film's directed by Steve Miner, who we've definitely watched films of his before. Friday the 13th, like Part 2, yeah. Part 3, House, Halloween H2O, Lake Placid. Like we've watched movies by this dude before.
And he's not like a big time television director. I think he's actually like pretty talented. I think Friday the 13th, Part 2 and 3 are like. They're the top of the franchise for me, so I think he's pretty
excellent.
Good.
Excellent movies, in the slasher genre, and it was written by David Twohy, who I think this was like his second movie. He did Critters 2, that was his first movie that he wrote, but then he did he wrote The Fugitive, and
I know, that's an Oscar-winning movie, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he's like The Arrival with Charlie Sheen, G.I. Jane, Pitch Black.
G.I. Jane, I loved as a kid, too, by the way.
He did the Riddick movies. He's a good writer and director in his own right.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, kind of a pedigree here. Stars Julian Sands, who I don't know. Like, this is what I know Julian Sands from. So
he was also in. This literally just popped in my head. I can't believe I just remembered this. Because I was just about to say the same thing as you. Like, I know him from this. Like, that's what I know him as.
Yeah, he's the Warlock.
He is... I can't believe I literally just remembered this. He is a pimp in Leaving Las Vegas. He is Elizabeth Shue's pimp in Leaving Las Vegas, and he's very good in that.
All right. Did not know that, but...
I'm sure you know the story of what happened to Julian Sands, though, probably.
Fill us in, Jeff. I don't know what you're referring to. I probably do know, but I'm just wondering.
I was like saying this tomorrow. If you remember this on the news, she did not. He disappeared while hiking last year, and they found him six months later. They found
did not know that. That's
yeah, he was a big hiker. He went missing. A lot of people, you know, who are fans of Warlock and stuff were like, hopefully he's okay, whatever. But, like, Yeah, they found his body like 6 months after he disappeared or something like that. I'm assuming, again, I didn't look any of this up. This is all by memory, but like, you know, he had some sort of misadventure while hiking, like he fell, you know, or something bad, which, you know, it's a shitty way to go.
Yeah. So alone, can't call for help, and just like wasting away. Yeah, it's awful.
And I like him, man. I think he's what makes these movies work. But
yeah.
He's a good actor.
So Julian stands, and then Richard E. Grant is the other main. I guess there's two other main characters, but Richard E. Grant plays like the witch hunter.
Red Fern.
And Laurie Singer is kind of the third star here. She plays this girl that is just happens to get kind of caught up, Cassandra with a K. It's the movie starts out though in like the 1690s, and I think they blew their entire fucking budget like on this part.
Yeah,
it looks cool. It
looks like the witch.
Yeah, like it's neat. Looks like, you know, old timey Boston or whatever. They're having a trial for this warlock. They kind of like, you know, they lay out his charges, and then he's sentenced to death. And then I wrote this down because like I heard it and then was like, no, they didn't just say that. And like I like skipped back and had the subtitles on. Yeah, so when they're sentencing him, they go, "Thou art to be hanged and then burned over a basket of living cats."
Oh, really?
What the fuck?
I was so concerned with like they got him in these chains. Yeah, and it's like thumb locks. Like they got like, and it's the thing they do again later in the movie.
Those are real too. I saw those for in some your reason. City.
Oh, really? Yeah. For some reason, that is what like. Because they try doing it to him later, like try putting his like toes and his thumbs into these locks, because that somehow stops the warlock from doing his magic shit, or so they hope. And I don't know. It's goofy.
It's like so those are that's an actual real like locking device that they would use, and what it is that it's like. The way you see Julian Sands and the first, you know, the first scene that he's in is he's kind of hunched over, his fingers are locked into this thing and it's attached to his toes. So he looks kind of like he's touching his toes, but he is locked in that position because he can't move his fingers or his toes. So he's just kind of like in this awkward bent back position. They sentence him to death. Red Fern starts to leave, and he goes outside, and there's like this major storm, and then, I don't know, he gets a premonition that shit's going south. So he runs back up the tower just as he sees the warlock kind of getting ready to escape. And a tornado, which is implied to be Satan, grabs both of them. And sends them to the future, Terminator style.
Yeah,
like
both these movies get Terminator comparisons too. By the way,
really? I thought immediately, like watching, like, you know, they do this like tornado thing, and they next scene.
This one, way more
is in like it's in the future or the 80s, and. Like you see like weird electrical stuff, like radios that are trash turn on. And so like, yeah, it's like, I was like, oh, it's like, they're paying a little homage to Terminator here. And Julian Sands, the warlock, he ends up being tossed through, this roommate's house, like into the house of this.
They're pretty chill about it.
This is hysterical because it's like I wrote this down too. It's like drunks just generally fly through windows in the canyon, I guess, because like they're not bothered by it. They're just like,
oh, well, they do think he's like drunk or something, right? Yeah. Like they're like, well, we can't just put him outside. Like we got to put him up in a room. I was like,
yeah,
I wouldn't do that, but okay.
The guy is, or no. Cassandra's like, we'll just put him outside. Like, and he's like, no, I can't do that. Like, where are we going to put him? He says, in your room, because everything's plastic. And then you see her room, and it is like, it's very garish, like very 80s, very 80s styled. And then immediately this movie kind of jumps into like weirdness from the get go. What were you going to say, Jeff?
Before you get to that, like, I did think it was interesting, like, when he shows up in the little tornado or whatever, there's like a thing on the radio about the Santa Ana winds, which I believe is what caused this major
the fire. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I had never heard of this until that fire. And then to see this movie start with that, I'm like, life is weird, man. Like,
yeah.
Random connections. Cause like, I had never heard of Santa Ana winds, and all this random movie from, you know, was made in 1988. Mentions them right away. I was like, weird, okay.
From there, you know, he's passed out, he's cut up, like there's blood everywhere, there's glass all over the place.
Hold on. He's passed out, right? He's passed out on the floor, yeah, right? He's
passed out. Yep.
When they pick him up and they're walking him to the bedroom, like his feet should be dragging along the floor, mm-hmm. but he's just
walking with him.
Did you notice that?
No. That's great.
You see his feet, and they're like, he's trying to do like limp walking, but like he's still walking, like he's helping the actors carry him. You know what I mean? Like, and I was just like, he's supposed to be passed out.
Yeah, like he should just be dead weight, and they should be dragging him. Yes. Yeah, that's hysterical. It's stuff like that though that's like goofy. That is like, there's a charm to it.
There is a lot of charm to this movie.
He wakes up the next day, like, you know, he's not quite sure where he is, and they're still like, man, you took some drugs last night because you still seem high as fuck. And she leaves him there with her roommate, who they start getting into to talking about shit, and, you know, he starts inspecting his jewelry, and he wants to grab it. And I thought this was a really kind of cool transition that they do is you know, the warlock kills Cassandra's roommate, bites out his tongue, and then he spits it into the frying pan because the guy's making breakfast at the time. He spits it into the frying pan, and they immediately cut to the diner where Cassandra works and like food being cooked.
Yeah.
It's like a neat little kind of a like transition there that was, yeah, it's kind of artistic. It's stupid, but it's a neat little transition.
Yeah, yeah, you'll see some of that movies, but yeah. Also, then, at first I thought he kissed him to death, and then he spit out the tongue, and I was like, okay.
And then the next scene here was one that just had me going. They could not make this fucking movie again. So I'm gonna read out part of the scene here. She's like interrogating. The cops are interrogating her, like, you know, asking questions about like, hey, like about your roommate, because like he was just murdered. You know, who does he hang out with? Like, what's going on? And I don't know. It gets really fucking weird. He goes, did he frequent public parks? And she just yells out, he didn't dick little boys through bathroom walls, okay?
I screenshotted that and put that on Twitter. I don't know if you saw that. I was just like, what are we doing here?
It's like, you said you're, like, just like nonchalant. Well, you said your roommate was gay.
And she's like, not queer or something? Queer, like,
big difference. Like, is there?
Yeah.
I mean, there's like a difference between, like, you know, fucking kids and being gay. Yeah, but like,
I think like the pedophile distinction like was kind of muddled in this era where it was like, if you were gay, probably. I mean, there's a strain of that still, right? Well,
I mean, very much in the late 80s too. Like Reagan was president.
Yeah,
he was very much. You know, this was before we started like caring about people that had AIDS. Like, so like. They were definitely demonized, and like this is kind of throwing that in. It was like such a weird line that just You could not throw that into a film today. You wouldn't. There's no reason to.
Well, maybe now.
Yeah. 2025, bringing it back.
Like it is like kind of the same thing now where it's like, oh, you know, like I'm talking about like right-wing people in this country. Like, you can't have like drag queens doing story time because they're trying to indoctrinate our kids. And they're all like... Like, this is still a strain in right-wing, like, ideology is that gay people are actually pedophiles. And it's like, that's two different things. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just because you're gay doesn't, you know, but, like, it's just so, in this movie, it's so, like, nonchalant and accepted as, like, the mainstream opinion of people. That they're just like, she has to explain to him, no, he's not queer, which I guess means pedophile in the 80s. He's just gay. Also, the notion that he got killed because he was gay is a very 80s notion, and that is in another movie we might do. Have you ever seen Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker?
I believe I have.
You believe you have?
Yeah.
There's a cop in that his whole thing is like, guy was a fag, right? Like, he's just like, all right, dude, all right, like, tone it down a little. Which is like the same thing. It's like because he was gay, like he was into all this deviant shit. It's like, no, not necessarily. Straight people can be deviants too. Like, I don't know.
It's just a weird thing to like kind of highlight here because like the guy is very, like, he's in it for two scenes. Like, they're like dragging him
through the mud. I thought they were a couple at first. Like, the very first scene where they're just on the hunt, they're a couple, and then it's like, she gets to the police station, and it's all like, no, he's just my roommate, and he's gay, but he's cool.
we don't really hang out, because, like, I work days, he works nights, or, like, he's out at night, or whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, she ends up going back to her house, where, you know, her roommate had been murdered, and, the witch hunter Redfern shows up. She's just having a fucking bad day. Like, her roommate's been killed. This dude walks in looking like Conan the fucking Barbarian. He's wearing like this like wolf skin like cloak. And he just like tossing her around. He smacks her, tells her like listen, woman, like something along those lines.
He's talking in this like old English, like, which is great. Canada, that's what makes the movie for me, honestly, is the fish out of water. Like,
it all, like, as soon as Redfern shows up, because like Julian Sands's Warlock is not this guy, but as soon as Redfern shows up, it becomes fucking like a Crocodile Dundee, but except it's like a dude from the 1690s. he has no idea what's going on, but he's tracking this warlock, and he's digging through her trash to get the warlock's blood, and she calls the cops in the meantime. They come take him away because he's fucking insane, seemingly, and then the warlock shows up. So her shitty day continues to get shittier, and he curses her it's like some sort of spell he casts where
he says she like ages a little,
20 years in a day. It's like a nursery rhyme almost.
In two nights you will age 20 years each night. It's just fun. It's a fun idea.
Yeah,
this guy's got he's got curses. He's got spells. We're gonna get into his fun little spells.
Where he's gonna make potions.
I love it so much. It's just cheesy, man. Like, good cheesy, not. Not like the prophecy. Like, this is good cheesy.
And she passes out, but when she wakes up, she's like fucking Rapunzel. Her hair has grown for 20 years. She's gray now.
Terrible age makeup.
Well, so did you watch this on Prime?
Yes.
Okay, so they have, and I didn't realize this, but they have this thing called X-ray. Which gives you like a like little, it's just from IMDb, like the movie facts,
like,
or whatever.
It's like pop up video, if anyone remembers that.
So she was contracted to do, like, they had age makeup, they had prosthetics to make her older, And the day she was supposed to do it, she was like, no, I'm not doing it. So, like, basically, she like, did it without makeup.
Yeah, they just gave her, like, long hair.
Yeah.
But, no, she does do age makeup later. And it's
a little bit, yes, for the when she becomes 60. Yeah.
Yes, it's not good.
But she refused. Like, I guess they had, like, full-on prosthetics and stuff for her and, like, to make her look older. And she would not
do it. That's so funny.
So she wakes up. She's old. And she's like, fuck. Like, maybe the crazy dude in the wolfskin cloak was, like, telling the truth. So she goes and bails him out of jail. It's like, all right. Like, magic evidently exists because I'm now fucking 40. How do we fix this? And he, like, you know, lays it out. You got to get, like, the item that he stole from you back. So she agrees to go on this road trip with him to chase down the warlock.
I don't think we've explained what the warlock is trying to do, have we?
No. So, okay. Yes, that is, yeah, he actually asks out loud. I skipped that part. He goes to a, like a medium. And the medium is clearly fake, but he uses his power to actually summon who he considers his father, Satan. And he talks to him and like, hey, why did you send me to this fucking nightmare future where I don't know anything? He's like, you need to reassemble this magic book called the Grand Grimoire.
Yeah.
It's been ripped apart and strewn everywhere. You need to find all the pieces, put it together. And once you do so, then we can kind of unmake creation together and I will claim you as my son.
Yeah, like Satan gets to unmake creation, and his reward is that he gets to be Satan's son, which apparently is the warlock's number one, like, goal in life.
He just wants to be noticed by daddy.
Yeah.
Part of that scene too, which I guess this comes in, is like he grabs the fucking eyes out of the psychic.
Yeah.
And starts carrying him around, and like they guide him to where the grimoire is, because he doesn't know where it is because he's been thrown 300, 400 years in the future, but Satan knows where they are, can at least kind of like point him in the right direction. So these eyeballs are kind of what's doing it. So he's carrying around these two fucking weird eyeballs. Redfern and Cassandra go off to hunt him down. And this is where, the potions come in.
Oh my God. I love this.
He like hangs out with this little kid in on a swing set. They're playing like video game football, like Tiger Electronics football.
You can't punt on first down. Not even the Tampa Bay does that.
That was funny.
And then like
the Bucks were terrible.
Yeah. And then Julian Sands tells him that he's a witch. He's like, you can't be a witch. Witches are girls. And he's like, some witches are boys. Like, I don't know.
Where's your broom?
Like, yes, it's just. It's the fish out of water thing. That's what makes this movie so fun. Like, it's just like these like fantastical like beings trying to talk to normal people from, you know, what was our time.
Yeah.
It's just like so stupid. But then, yeah, go ahead.
So he's like, well, there's a church going on and they're singing. Like, why aren't you there? And he's like, well, my dad don't like church. So we don't go. And I guess it turns out that he also wasn't baptized, in which case that allows the warlock to fly. Because we find out that they've killed the boy, like stripped him of his skin, and they're hunting coyotes because that's who they think have done it. But Redfern shows up, talks to the mom of the dead kid. And he's like, oh no, like now he will travel much faster because nothing works better than unbaptized children fat for flying potions.
And then they cut to him cooking up the fat.
Yeah, and drinking
it out. He flies around with these terrible effects. Like, it just looks so bad.
It's so funny, though. Like, the way it's, like, it's just, like, it's so dumb, but it's, like, alright, it kind of works. I like it. It's terrible. He flies by a cop, like, kind of just, like, looking over at him. The cop, like, it has the radar gun out. So dumb. The whole thing super goofy. I just love how goofy it kind of like gets.
Yeah.
The next big scene, they're heading out to, I don't know exactly where they are. They've been driving for a while, so I guess they're still out in a like California area. They go to this farmhouse and they pull in, and Redfern just burst into this family home.
I have this as a note.
He just barges in and starts yelling at them that they're all bewitched.
He's like, he like, imagine, it's just a family, like, of this farmhouse. They have no idea what's coming. This dude from the 1600 busts through their door, and he's like, tell me your woes! Are you bewitched? I was like, what the fuck? I was dying laughing at it.
Like, the two normal people, like, the husband and wife are like, what, like, the what? Fuck?
Yeah.
And then this fucking Amish dude, Mennonite, he busts out. He's like, we are bewitched. Like, what the fuck? Oh my god, it's so funny. Then he like lays out the rules of like dealing with a warlock. Like, you don't look in their eyes, don't show fear. Also, keep this copper in your mouth. So he gives them some pennies. Has some holding them on in his mouth, like they're fucking fangs.
Does he lay out something about salt water? Because this is a very important question I have about the end of the movie. Yeah.
So prior to that, when they're driving, so he is. He has the Morton salt, and he just keeps laying it all over the whip. Then he's like throwing it into his mouth and like licking it. And she makes a joke of like, if you're hungry, we can just stop. And he's like, no, I'm not hungry. And she's like, all right, then what the fuck are you doing? And she didn't say fuck, because I don't there's not a whole lot of cursing in this movie. But she's like, what the hell are you doing then? And he's like, I'm salting the leather. Like, so, witches don't go together. Like, salt doesn't work.
I guess I either missed that or didn't click, because when I got to the end, I was like, was that one of his weaknesses? Like, I don't understand.
Yes. So, okay. Which is also why in this scene at the farmhouse with the Mennonite, you know, he's able to kind of whip, he's able to whip the warlock and hold him, and it's painful to him.
Does he like lasso him like while he's flying? Yes.
Yeah, he flies away, and Redfern's holding it, and he's being dragged across the wall. He rams into the fucking barn. It's hysterical. And there's a, you know, they capture him. They finally do bring him down. He somehow tosses a fucking weather vane at him. So goofy. He like spikes him with this weather vane. He throws it like it's a fucking football. This thing has to weigh like 70 pounds, and he's just tossing it like it's a football. It spears the warlock with it, who goes down. They start to put on the finger and thumb locks onto him, and the Mennonite stop. Like, I guess he drops the pennies at some point, so they're not in his mouth protecting him. And he's looking directly at the warlock, and he hurts him. So then it, you know, the warlock starts running away, hopping, I think. And Redfern, like, instead of chasing after him, he wants to help the dude who just got hurt. Meanwhile, Cassandra's like, fuck that noise. Like, I'm 60 years old now. Like, I'm going to chase after him because I'm gonna be dead tomorrow if I don't do this. And this is, I did write this down. The train chase sequence is super dumb. Like, she's 60. She's not 6,000. She is like, I get it. Like, you know, at one point we probably thought 60 years old was really old, but you know, 60-year-olds, they're in okay shape. Like some of them are terrible. Some of them are in awful shape, but
Blake, if we're going to be there.
Right. And I mean, I work with some 60-year-olds, like I'm sure they have more aches and pains than we do in our 40s, but like, they're going to the gym. Some of them, I'm sure you work with some.
That, I know people who do my job
that
are in their 60s, and it's like, there's the guy that works next to me. Like, I'm route one, he's route two, so we stand next to each other in the morning. He's 65, man. I'm just like, how are you doing this? Like, I don't think I'll be able to do this in 10 years, but okay.
So, like, they make it seem like she's like 1,000 years old chasing after this train. And I get it. It's a train. It's moving. But, like, it was awful. But before that, kind of neat, is Redfern tells Cassandra that, like, hey, you know, we've taken his shoes from him. So his feet are bare. If you come across his footprints and you put a nail through it, it'll gimp him, basically. Like, it'll hurt him.
And it's getting back because he hurt her foot. He hurt her foot earlier in the movie, so it's kind of revenge she gets on him.
Did he hurt her foot
earlier? I think she steps on that little piece of crystal.
Okay.
I think. Something like that. But yeah, it's neat. It's like voodoo shit. She's like pounding nails into the sand, and he's into the train car, like...
And she's like giddy, like when it works.
Yeah,
like
she's
like having a good time. He blocks it at one point by like ripping out a piece of the
Sense, but okay, yeah.
No, but like, well, I guess the theory is his feet are covered now, so like there's something
that's protecting like the nail. She's nailing through the bottom, whatever. Like,
yeah,
sure, whatever.
But like that's why they had to take his shoes so they could do that. Otherwise, you'd be able to do it all the time. I guess there has to be dumb rules,
it's all stupid. Anyway,
it's a neat little idea that they kind of like they play with. She gets her bracelet back, and she's kind of like gonna be like, I'm noping out. I taught you how to drive, not really, but I told you how to drive, and you can continue chasing them. Like, I'm done. And then he kind of like lays out, like, if you don't, like, look, if I don't get this. If I don't get there before he does and he's able to put this together, it's not going to matter what you go do. Like, everyone's going to die anyway because he's going to unmake creation. So she kind of agrees, like, and then, all right, fine, we'll do this. Where do we got to go? Oh, it's in Boston. Okay, well, we're not going to get there in my car. We're going to fly. So they go to the airport. And wow, shit has definitely changed. I knew this already. I've traveled. You've traveled. Anybody that's traveled in the last like 20 years or so, know it's changed since the late 90s. You know, since
smoking fucking
airplanes. Yes, they're fucking smoking on airplanes.
He freaks out about the guy smoking. Right? He's like, oh, it's signs of a witch.
Well, because he's lighting a cigarette, but. You know, he didn't like
flame was blue. Like,
yes, the flame was blue, but it's coming out of like a butane lighter.
Yeah.
It's not witchcraft. It's a fucking lighter. They go through like they're buying tickets like at the fucking counter, and she just pulls the fucking plug out of the credit card machine and they let them go through. He's carrying around a fucking weather vane. it's goofy. He gets all paranoid, like you said, because he saw somebody lighting a cigarette. And I guess he also thought that, like, somebody was pouring in their coffee and, like, I guess the cream tasted bad. I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah.
He was like, cream goes sour with no reason. Like spouting off nonsense and shit. Because Julian Sands has the warlock is on the plane. He's in the baggage hole. I think this last third is like not quite as it's still fun. It's not quite as much fun as like the first two kind of big acts. Once they get to Boston, it gets a whole lot darker too. Like everything takes place at night.
That's fun.
I'll tell you why
in a minute, but yeah.
Okay. I just thought it wasn't quite as goofy.
I wanted to touch on one thing.
Yeah.
When they're at the farm, the pastor and his wife, the wife, I'm looking at this lady, I'm like, this lady has such a distinctive face. Like, and I'm like, it clicked and I looked it up and I was right. She is the hooker who gets her face like disfigured in the beginning of Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood's, you know, Western. And she's like kind of the catalyst for that whole movie. Like what happens to her is what sends him and Morgan Freeman out to go.
Yeah.
Oh, did that to her. And I was just like, man, I haven't seen this lady in a lot, but I think she might have been up for like awards for the Unforgiven. And here she is in Warlock a few years prior.
Was she the wife of the farmhouse dude or the wife of the
there's like a pastor. There's a pastor who shows like her credit in the movie is pastor's wife. Like okay. They don't even give her a name. And I was just like, wow, she went from pastor's wife to like really like she has an amazing scene with Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven where he's talking to her. And she kind of sets off the whole story of Unforgiven. I was just like, I knew that face. I was like sitting there looking at her, and I'm without looking it up, like without Googling, I was like, she's the girl from Unforgiven, right? And then I looked it up, and I was like, sure enough, yeah, that was her.
So they end up at this church. The pastor there, is like, no, like you know, why are you here? Church is closed. And he lays out, we're looking for the Grand Grimoire. Like, and all of a sudden he like opens the fucking gate up and is like, all right, yeah. Come on in. I can't give you any, none of it's for sale. It's like, we're trying to prevent it from being combined with like a crazy person. I don't think he believes them, at least not at first. Until the warlock kind of shows up later, but points him to a graveyard where, hey, like, you know, it's all been buried on consecrated ground. You're good. Like, warlock can't go there except they're moving graves. They've moved half of the graves on the other side, which isn't consecrated ground. And I believe it's Redfern's grave that holds the
yes.
Like, he's the one.
He's so freaked out about it.
Okay. It's like, oh, I'm dead. Like
I don't want to see me dead. I want to see my skeleton.
She's just like, what's the big deal? Like, yeah. You had to know you weren't going to live forever, right?
Yeah.
And there's a big battle in the graveyard. It is kind of fun. Like, you know, there's back and forth. They're knocking over gravestones and magic flying around and they're whipping and she gets tossed into the fucking bay. Into the Boston Harbor, which is funny that there's a fucking graveyard that close to the harbor. and this is, I think this is where you were like, well, how did that work? Cause she, they make a big deal out of it early on is that she's diabetic. They actually show her injecting, you know, the insulin into her early in the film.
Yes. Yes. They show her multiple times doing that.
Yeah.
And she uses, like, she takes two needles full and puts it in them. But yes. She says, try salt water, fuck brain. And her line reading is the worst line reading I've ever heard. She's like, try salt water, fuck brain. Like, you're just like, did you not realize how to deliver that line? Why did you deliver it all as one without a comma? Impressive. And no question mark. Like, the way she says it, I'm just like, that is, like, seriously, watch this movie. Just watch that scene again. You'd be like, that is a terrible line reading. But it leads to the best effects in the movie.
Yeah. You know, he starts, like, boiling over, basically. Like, the salt water definitely having some sort of allergic reaction to it. And he starts burning from the inside out.
They're doing like bladder effects under his skin. Like you can see like veins popping out and his like face starts bulging. And then it gets really cool. Like, honestly, I thought the effects at the end here were awesome.
Yeah. Very like out of these two films, this is where it looks the best. Like And this was filmed 7 years earlier. They were. Although, like, I love the flying. It's so stupid.
It's very charming, but it looks terrible.
Like, Warlock spent all of its money on the opening and ending of this film, though. And it's good, because the rest of it works on charm alone, and, you know, the Warlock gets a cool death sequence here.
Oh, dude, it's solid. Like, it's, like, then he's, like, it's all skin melts off, and you just see, like, the muscle, and, you know, he looks like a fucking zombie from Return of the Living Dead, and I'm like, holy shit. Like, they fucking cook him.
No, I don't. I just wrote down, like, I didn't really quite get how Redfern returns. Like, him and Cassandra kind of like, oh, like, I gotta leave now. And,
yeah, and then how the you fucking get
tornado. Like, but, like, Satan was the tornado in the original one. Like, he just kind of hitched a ride with the Warlock to our time. How did he get home? Like, it's not explained.
No,
he goes back to the 1690s. And Cassandra then, neat little touch. She takes the Grand Grimoire and buries it in the salt flats, which honestly you would have thought, hey, somebody should have figured that shit out. We should have buried it under salt years ago.
Yeah. Then we have to send Kyle Reese through time to fucking.
But overall, ton of fun.
I
had a blast with this one.
Yeah, I did too. As soon as it ended on Amazon Prime, which, by the way, I thought Amazon Prime's transfer looked really good. The movie did not look old, other than the effects. I mean, but that's just not what it is.
Yeah.
It went straight into Warlock 2, and I watched Warlock 2. Well, like, I think I have 30 minutes left, but I was like, went straight into Warlock 2, I'm having fun. It's kind of just like the same thing again, in a way, but not as good, because you don't have the Redfern guy. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's just him, and then there's like these people who are druids, apparently, like, just like old dudes, like old American dudes who are apparently druid, who are like been waiting for him to show up to stop him, but it's kind of the same idea. And then, like, well, actually, it's like he's trying to collect the, like, Infinity Stones.
Okay.
And the weird thing is like, Julian Sands, like, in part two, looks how I remember him more. Like, in the first one, he's wearing, like, a Mortal Kombat outfit. And and the second one, it's, like, just, like, a dark black suit, which is how I remember him. And he doesn't have the ponytail. Like, the second one, he just has, like, long hair that's, like, slicked back. And so I'm like, did I watch part two more? I know I watched Warlock as a kid. It was like one of those movies I would have caught on like USA, and I liked it, but I didn't remember a lick of it. Like, so it was really fun to revisit.
Yeah, so I thought I watched it more recently, but it turns out it was like 2017. The last time I watched it,
sadly.
Yeah, no, it's not. But yeah, much like you, this was a film that I think we talked about before, like Halloween 2 or The Exorcist, they would play on like Sunday afternoons on like
a
local TV station.
All the time,
and, And like this was one of the ones that was kind of thrown in that rotation, and that
that's
was
how I
was exposed to it. Yeah. And it was a ton of fun then. And I'd fallen off of it until I watched it again in 2017, but it was a favorite of mine as a kid, like watching those Sunday horror films that they would put on regular TV. Ton of fun. I don't remember anything about the two sequels. I know you just kind of like explained some of two. There's a third one that doesn't star Julian Sands.
I've never seen that.
I know I like that less than two, because my letterbox rating is a two on that one. So
there is a part early in part two where he turns someone into a Picasso sculpture.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I might need to rewatch that.
I would recommend it. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm like, it's just more, it lacks some of the fish out of water charm of the first one, because you don't have Redfern, but it's okay.
Redfern is so much fun.
Yeah.
In the original one. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And I think I think we know where this is going to end up. But what is your final rating for Warlock, Jeff?
It's not a good movie.
Sure.
It's very fun. It's very fun if you are our age. So I think that if you don't remember this era of film, like if you're like born in the year 2000, you watch this, you'd probably be like, what the fuck is this? But if you remember this era, if you remember the 80s and some of the garbage and stuff that you would rent in the 80s, this is right in that. And it's very fun. And I think Julianne Sands, rest in peace, is fucking awesome in these movies. Yeah, it's just goofy, silly. Like, it's that fish out of water thing that was very popular in the 80s, and they would do a lot with these genre movies to save money. Like, a great example of this is Masters of the Universe. It's set in Eternia, it's set in like modern, like, city, because they saved money doing it that way.
Shit is hysterical. Like, you just have like He-Man and full on He-Man gear just walking like around New York LA. City.
Yeah, or, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's just, so. But like that's the fun of these movies. And so if you remember this era, definitely like Warlock is worth like your time. It's a good like hangover movie on a Saturday or Sunday or something. To me, I'm gonna give it like a 6 out of 10. But you know, that's a seal of approval on this podcast.
Again, slightly higher than Jeff on this one, 7 out of 10. But yeah, it's a joy. Like, I think I'm with you. I'm not sure I could sit my kids down and like why, like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't think that they would get out of it what I got out. They were just like, this is dumb. Like,
it's dumb. The effects are bad. Story stupid. It's all of those things, but that's like the charm of it, I think, for us.
It's a super charming. You know, the Redfern character, you know, is great. Julianne Sands is great in it. It's goofy fun. I enjoyed myself returning to it this time out.
So it's gonna be Warlock is the winner here.
Yep. And so what are we doing for February, Jeff?
Well, I ran out of good ideas.
Oh, no.
So I went back to, like, one of the ideas. This has been sitting on the shelf since before we conceived the, like, while we were conceiving this podcast. I've been sitting on this one for 5 years. And, Chris, when you were a kid growing up, you're a big Stephen King fan, right?
I was, yeah. Still am.
Still am. And when you would go to that section in the bookstore or the library, there'd be King, and then right after him, there'd be this other author, Dean Koontz.
I have never read a Dean Koontz novel.
I remember you saying this, okay? And one, I would like to encourage you to like read some of them, because they're kind of like, let me put it this way. When I was a kid, Dean Koontz is what got me into reading.
Okay.
And for the longest time, I was a bigger fan of Koontz than King. And I'll bring this up again when we do this episode, but like, to me, Koontz like had better plots, and his books were better page turners. So it's like, he had his plot. Like, you could tell Stephen King would get to the end and be like, I don't know what to do here. And Koontz would like, no, this has been mapped out. And and he would do like, Koontz would do these like super short like chapters that are like 3 pages long, and every 3-page chapter was a cliffhanger, and so like he really knew how to do a page turner.
Okay.
And I'll get into more of what makes a Koontz story in the next one. I'll do all what I just said and more in the next episode, but unfortunately, like, he has not had very good adaptations of his work. And so I'm going to continue the cheese next time. This is my revenge. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to do from, I believe it's 1977, Demon Seed.
I like that name.
Yeah.
and that's actually, I won't give away my feelings on any of these things. Yeah, so from 1977, we're going to do Demon Seed, and from 1995, we're going to do Hideaway.
Hideaway, all right.
And Demon Seed is, I believe, on Tubi, and Hideaway got added to Tubi today.
Oh, fantastic.
So these will be, this will be a free episode for us. I think at the next episode, like at the top of it, I'll do a long, like little, like mini class on what makes a Dean Koontz story, the problems with his adaptations, etc., etc. He has not had many adaptations of this work, and most of them are bad, including maybe these. We'll see.